All right, in the Holy War, I want to apologize with all sincerity. I apologize for the length of the service this morning and the message. I lost track of time, and I had thoughts I wanted to complete in order to move on, and I didn't realize we'd gone so very far over. I'm sorry for that. We take up our study this afternoon in the Holy War. In the paragraph which begins, when Diabolus saw that his captains and soldiers, high lords and renown, were frightened and beaten down by the stones that came from the golden slings of the prince of the town of Mansoul, he bethought himself and said, I will try to catch them by fawning. I will try to flatter them into my net. Now, it had become obvious that the direct assault was not going to work, and his men were being beaten back, and damage was being done to them. And so he undertakes to change tactic. And of course, that's just wise warfare counsel, right? You try one thing, that doesn't work, you try something else, change tactics. Well, Satan has at least two tactics. One is the direct onslaught. And you'll remember, don't forget now who it is that's bringing this assault. It's this thousands of doubters. The doubters are attacking the castle. And so he sees that the slings of Emmanuel are hurling out these promises, and so they're making no headway at all. They're losing ground, in fact. And so he says, I will try to change and see if I can flatter them into my net. Berger said, Satan has various modes of attack. If he succeed not as the roaring lion, he will assume the crafty serpent. If he prevail not by fear, he will resort to flattery. In the latter way, he obtained his purpose with our first mother. A flattery. So, he says, I will try to catch them by fawning. I will try to flatter them into my net. Wherefore, after a while, he came down again to the wall. Not now with his drum, with Captain Sepulcher, but having all besugared his lips. That's a wonderful expression, isn't it? Having all besugared his lips, he seemed to be a very sweet-mouthed, peaceable prince, designing nothing for humor's sake, nor to be revenged on man's soul for injuries by them done to him, but rather the welfare and good and advantage of the town and people therein was now, as he said, his only design. Wherefore, after he had called for audience and desired that the town folk would give it to him, he proceeded in his oration and said, now this is the speech whereby he is going to attempt to flatter them into his net. Diabolus says, oh, the desire of my heart, the famous town of Mansoul, how many nights have I watched, and how many weary steps have I taken, if perhaps I might do thee good? Far be it from me to desire to make war upon you. Really? If ye will but willingly and quietly deliver up yourselves unto me. You know that you were mine of old. Remember also that so long as you enjoyed me for your lord, and that I enjoyed you for my subjects, you wanted for nothing of all the delights of the earth that I, your lord and prince, could get for you, or that I could invent to make you bonny and blithe withal. Now, there's a wonderful old English expression, isn't it? Bonnie and blithe withal. That's great. That's wonderful. You boys should write that down somewhere, and later in your years of courtship, you might use that with your courting one. You want to make her bonny and blithe withal. It's a wonderful old English expression. But, of course, it's Satan's deception. Consider you never had so many hard, dark, troublesome, and heart-afflicting hours while you were mine, as you have since you revolted from me. Nor shall you ever have peace again until you and I become one as before. But prevailed with to embrace me again, and I will grant, yea, enlarge your old charter with abundance of privileges, so that your license and liberty shall be to take, hold, enjoy, and make your own all that is within you, all that is pleasant from the east to the west. Nor shall any of those incivilities wherewith you have offended me be ever charged upon you by me, so long as the sun and moon endure. Nor shall any of those dear friends of mine that now, for the fear of you, lie lurking in dens and holes and caves in man's soul, be hurtful to you any more. Yea, they shall be your servants, and shall minister unto you of your substance and of whatever shall come to hand. I need speak no more. You know them, and have sometime since been much delighted in their company. Why, then, should we abide at such odds? Let us renew our old acquaintance and friendship again. Bear with your friend. I take the liberty at this time to speak thus freely unto you. The love that I have to you presses me to do it, as also does the zeal of my heart for my friends with you. Put me not, therefore, to further trouble, nor yourselves to further fears and frights. Have you, I will, in a way of peace or war. Nor do you flatter yourselves with the power of force of your captains, or that your Emmanuel will shortly come to your help, for such strength will do you no pleasure. I am come again with you to a stout and valiant army. I have come against you with a stout and valiant army, and all the chief princes of the den are even at the head of it. Besides, my captains are swifter than eagles, stronger than lions, more greedy of prey than are the evening wolves. What is Og of Bashan? What is Goliath of Gath? What are 100 more of them to one of the least of my captains? How then shall man's soul think to escape my hand and force? Now, he just said, you remember, he just said, I have no desire to make war against you. Then he ends up boasting about how he will do that very thing and absolutely will succeed. Our commentator very wisely comments on this section of Bunyan's treatment. He says, while the warfare continues, the soul is strong. There is something bracing in the very exercise of the conflict. Now, before we read the rest of that, I wanted to pause right there. There's a lesson there that's vital for us as Christians. He says, as long as they're continuing to do battle, to do warfare, things continue to move along fairly well for the soul. Satan, of course, Diabolus here, is wanting to halt the war and resort to methods of flattery. That's real danger for man's soul. He says it this way, and I love the way he put it. There is something bracing in the very exercise of the conflict. There's something about engaging in the war, staying in the war, continuing this posture as clear and decisive enemies that is reinforcing to the soul. To lay that aside is to invite danger. There is something bracing in the very exercise of the conflict. That's a good principle. That's a good lesson. And something manly in learning the experiences of the battlefield. Therefore, would Satan have the warfare cease? He loves to see the flag of truce, the white flag of the wearied and exhausted warrior who would interrupt the strife in order to bury his dead or to rest himself in the soft lap of pleasure or indulgence. Hence, Dymas invites the warring soul to a parley and seeks with honeyed speech and sugared lips to put the soul off its guard and to deceive it as he had before deceived it. Now, when it comes to choosing between warfare and indulging pleasure, you'll remember how man's soul got in this mess to begin with. They sat down at the table of carnal security and were feasting until they grieved Emmanuel away. So it was not battling that got them in this trouble. It was this very pleasure and comfort to which Diabolus is now calling them. All the things he always said, I'll bring you pleasure, I'll bring you comfort, I'll enlarge your charter bigger than before, I will get you everything you want, I will give you your pleasures. Well, that's exactly how they got where they are now. We go on in the commentary, and in this parley, he speaks as though it were his love and friendship for the soul, his desire and zeal for its welfare, that prompted him thus to seek back and recover its lost allegiance to his throne. Sometimes cowering with a craven spirit, sometimes defying with a defiant air, he intermingles love and hate, promises and threatenings, showing the soul, though falsely, the conditions and consequences of the alternative that is now before it. He also reminds the soul of its present agitations and anxieties as compared with the ease and pleasure of its former service under sin, when no such deep feelings or dark thoughts or doubting fears or sad surmisings troubled it, when it lay in the lap of Satan and was satisfied. He thus invites the soul once more beneath the power of his dominion, promises that these giant sins shall be servants to serve and not masters to rule and govern. And at last, magnifies the power of his fierce anger, the force of his mighty strength, the terribleness of his unquenchable wrath, in comparison with which Goliath and the giants of those days were as nothing, their strength, but weakness, and all their might is a thing of no account. Are there no parleys like this in our experience? Of our own backslidings and of Satan's efforts to repossess our soul? Do none of the true Israel of God ever look back and sigh after the flesh pots of Egypt? Are not our ears at times attentive to the comparisons of Satan's speech when he contrasts the servants of God with the former service to the flesh and suggests the thought of a return to the dominion of carnal things? Satan does often address himself to the renewed soul, whispering thoughts of apostasy, faithlessness, and unbelief. And by the way, that is especially the case when the soul is already troubled, under attack, weak. You remember? That's how they were described. It's then that he will come and remind you how very nice it was before you got into all this. You better believe that is a tactic he has never forsaken. Continues that, in the life of every believer to this day. He will remind you how much better you got along with your spouse, how much better you got along with your family, how much more fun everybody had, and what good times it was. He will remind you, trying to lure you back into the paths of sin. And he promises you that those sins will never be your master. They'll always be your servants. But we know that's a lie, don't we? Every alcoholic that's ever died, every dope addict that's ever died, knows that's a lie. But such are his tactics. Berger said, "This infernal liar promises great things, wonderful liberty, all sensual gratifications with perfect freedom from all religious fears and restraints. But he does not say that after all of this, the words of Scripture, ye shall lie down in sorrow." Satan has approached all of us at one time or another with such fair speeches, sugared lips, honeyed words. Diabolus, having thus ended his flattering, fawning, deceitful, and lying speech to the famous town of Mansoul, the Lord Mayor replied, hallelujah, the Lord Mayor replied to him as follows, "O Diabolus, prince of darkness and master of all deceit, thy lying flatteries we have had and made sufficient probation of, and have tasted too deeply of that destructive cup already. Should we therefore again hearken unto thee, and so break the commandments of our great Shaddai, to join in affinity with thee, would not our prince reject us and cast us off forever? Being cast off by him, can the place that he has prepared for thee be a place of rest for us? Besides, O thou that art empty and void of all truth, we are rather ready to die by thy hand than to fall in with thy flattering and lying deceits." It was Berger who said, "That is an excellent answer. Past experience has proved enough that sin is bitterness in the end. Let us treat Satan as a liar and maintain our allegiance to our prince." Now, remember, while all of this is going on, all of this exchange, all of this turmoil, while all of this is going on, petitions are being sent to Emmanuel, and he is saying nothing. That's where it gets really hard. Why would he do that? Because man's soul must learn. Why would you correct your child with punishment? Doesn't it hurt? Isn't it painful? But why would you? Because they must learn. They must learn that sin is damaging, that there's a price to be paid, that it will not be let go. And poor man's soul, weak, struggling, bitterness of heart, all these first open attacks and then lying flatteries, all of this, and they're hearing nothing from the prince. they must learn. He will not allow them to entertain sin. He will not. He will not allow it. He will not have it. There's a price to be paid. There's a price to be paid. I said it in the message this morning. The last point, last lesson from Joshua this morning. Lesson to the saints. There is a price to be paid for disobedience. Israel is paying it today. Israel has paid it for 2,000 years. And will continue until he's pleased to have mercy. There's a price to be paid, even for God's covenant people. We were extra long this morning in the service, so I'll not take on a big bite of the Holy War this afternoon, but I'm sure there's got to be comments. Some of you others would like to bring comment about this particular section and Satan's change of strategy. When the tyrant saw that there was little to be got by parleying with my Lord Mayor, he fell into an hellish rage and resolved that again, with his army of doubters, he would another time assault the town of Mansoul. Turned right around, and fell into a hellish rage. Any comments or questions? That is because at one time our father was the devil. We were his children. He reminds them of that in his speech. He says, you remember, when I was Lord here. Indeed. That the Lord Mayor gave, he said, we'd rather die by thy hands than fall in the flattering lying deceits. The commentator said, it is the part of the enlightened understanding to give the soul's answer back to Satan. When the God of this world blinds the minds of them that believe not, the understanding is darkened and it can cast back no bold words of positive refusal to reply to the devices of Satan. But now, there is light beaming upon the eye of the soul. Accordingly, the understanding now replies, and it distinctly answers, no. Boldly and with a good conscience, it answers, no. Under deep exercise of spirit, it answers, no. By the love it bears the prince, it answers, no. And in the interest of its future history, it answers, no. I, death rather than denial of the prince, the grave rather than surrender to diabolus. Well done, thy words are brave and bold. At times they seem to me like Luther's in the days of old, half battles for the free. And indeed, this decisive action of the soul awakes the wrath of hell and Satan. And of course, he flew into a hellish rage. And from the failure of his fawning speech, he retires, breathing out threatenings and slaughter against the bold principles of the anxious soul, which is now seeking to regain its lost evidence and to recover the forfeited favor of Emmanuel. The heart is still crying out to Emmanuel. Crying out to Emmanuel. And trying with all that its might to regain the lost evidence. Well, it's terrible when you lost the evidence, isn't it? And you know it. You know it. You know it when it's so. You can put on a face to others, but you know in your heart when the evidence is lost. And the heart cries out. Any more comments? This is a searching, revealing portion of this book. Shines a floodlight right into the very soul of every one of us.